Hi, and welcome to our podcast. This is group two from the K-12 online final questions. No, it's not. We better edit that out. I read way too much. What's the name of this
K-12
class?
K-12 online final questions.
K-12 online
conference.
Okay. Hi, welcome to... Let's try that one more time. Okay, I'll get it. I promise. Hi, welcome to our podcast. This is group two from the K-12 online conference in the St. Vrain Valley School District. My name is Jim Asmus. I'm from the Career Development Center in Longmont, Colorado.
I'm Sean Tank from Longmont High School, a math and computer science teacher.
Joanne Meester, a teacher librarian at Longmont High School.
I'm Lynn Hanhill, elementary teacher at Indian Peaks Elementary.
And Sue Alberg, teacher librarian at Coleridge Middle School.
We're going to discuss a few questions that we've written up here. Talking about Web 2.0 and using technology in the classroom. It's going to be just sort of a conversation. So the first question we have is there one thing you've seen that you might use in your classroom or already have started?
Yes. Should I say my name?
This
is Joanne, Longmont High School. So far, I have set up a couple different blogs. And I've used VoiceThread. I taught the kids, and they went to the technology fair and won second place. And they did a great VoiceThread. But I also have tried numerous other tools. A lot of the ones that are on 50 tools, and I think it's Alan Levine. So there's just so many things to play with, and I'd be plan to continue.
Well, I've started a blog, but I haven't successfully got it rolling and being used by students. But I've actually appreciated all the forms, just the ideas from the different teachers taking this course have been very helpful for me.
I have my students' blog at the end of every unit that they do. That's in place of their writing. Rather than turning in paper, I'd like to have them write something where the whole world can see it, and other people can go and kind of check out what they're doing. And then I also have two or three wikis, which I use sort of like Wikipedia. One is on using digital video. One is on creating web pages. And in those wikis, the students will write about something new that they learned, something that other students then could go and find out about it, something that they might not learn in a textbook. For instance, my video students have to film, and there's not instruction on the camera, for instance. And so students will put up instructions on the camera on this wiki, or they'll put up how to use the wireless mics on the wiki.
Good idea.
Then they can all, if they're interested, they can, you know, go to the wiki and find new things so that when they're ready to film, they know how to do it.
Do you have requirements for the blog when students blog at the end of a chapter?
Yeah, I have a prompt for them to write about.
So do you make them, or what are the requirements? Is it to be more than a sentence?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
How many words?
It generally, there's not a set number of words or a set amount, but they need to answer the question completely, and I grade them on their blogs. And one of the things about my class is anything a student does, they can redo. And so if it's not up to par, I say, go fix it. And they always come back, you can edit your posts? And I say, yes, you must edit your posts.
Very
and
good.
So they go back and redo them.
Are there specific norms, Jim, in terms of what you can't do, or what is, besides, length of...
Well, with their prompts, it kind of leads towards what they should be writing about, but I get a lot of kids who add little pieces of video to it, or they'll add pictures, they link to... And I don't even require that to start, but they start exploring, and they know a whole lot more about it coming in than you think. And this is my second or third year doing it, and as time goes on, the kids come in knowing how to do a whole lot more.
So my question is, when you first get your students and they're new to your classroom, do they come with a certain level of skills, technology skills?
There's not a requirement. Usually there's an interest to teach a technology area. But I would say at least half of them have above, you know, well above average skills. The other half probably have around average skills. I usually don't get anybody who can't turn on the computer or, you know, can't fly through stuff. But as far as being productive, not all of them are real productive to start.
So are you having to, like, support some of that lack of skill?
Oh, sure. I have...
the Wiki does a lot of that.
The Wiki does...
One kid teaches the other kid how to start the camera.
And I have a series of online tutorials also that some of them I created, some of them students created. They're video tutorials.
Is it through Moodle? Or no?
No, it's...
Because that wasn't around 3 years ago.
It's done. I have my own website, and I host the videos myself.
Well, just to, the reason I asked the blogging questions is because I am planning on, well, I've set up a Moodle class with blogging and information literacy so that my student aides in the library actually learn something when they leave the library. And I try to make it as simple as possible, and they'll have to go to this site, about information library, and then they're required to blog. And so that's why I asked the question about how you get them to write a certain amount. Because I have a feeling I'd end up with one sentence. And so
right.
I changed. I made the requirements simple, but a little bit, you know, like you said, prompts.
Yeah.
And one of the things in there is, what would you share with somebody else something new that you learned beyond what's in this site? So I like when you said that. That was good.
How long is your class?
In a day? 70 minutes in a day.
70 minutes.
But I have students who take it from 1/4 to 3 years, depending on what software they want to study. So
you can see what it does.
Sometimes.
How about you, Sean? What's going on in your classroom?
To start with things that I already do, and one of the courses I teach is AP Computer Science, and the main thing we do towards the end is kids do a project, pretty large project, and in the past they've made web pages to document their project and to write about what they did and describe it and everything. And in the past I've done it, they do a web page, they turn it in, and then I upload it, and then that's it, and then every now and then they'll get a chance to revise it. This year what I did was give them access to uploading it. So I didn't do a wiki per se. I just gave them access to their specific spot on my website and just let them edit it themselves. And definitely some of the groups have gone miles above and beyond what kids have done in the past and work on it from what I've seen, many, many more hours than they ever could in class. So that part of it has worked out well. So I guess you could think of it as a wiki, even though it doesn't have any of the regular structure we see in other ones, but it works basically the same way. They can edit their own. Then, as far as things I might do in the future, I can see that working well for other classes. This one is just easy because it's usually a lot of very motivated, focused kids, so that makes it easy to start with that. For other classes, like some of my math classes, I've thought about doing like a homework forum kind of thing where they have an online just space that they can talk with each other about when they're working on homework. So if they're home at 9 o'clock at night and they're working on something and they're stuck, they could go there, and if somebody else happens to be there at the same time, they could talk about it without having to call, or, you know, makes it a little bit easier to connect.
It's amazing how, like, you teach some math classes, is that right?
Yeah.
It's amazing how the students all do their homework by a computer, isn't it? I've got a daughter who's a sophomore, and it doesn't matter what homework she's doing, she's downstairs at the desk near her computer because that's where they find their resources. If they get stuck, if I don't know the answer, which happens a lot, that's where they get online and they look up the math sites that have clues to how to solve different things. And if they're doing an English project on Romeo and Juliet and they forgot part of the theme or some of the lines, they can get online and they can find that for sure. And so you're talking about having something there where they can help each other. They would all be near their computer just about ready to, and if they just left it up.
And adults don't always think of that. We had a teacher, one of our teachers in the library, and she came up to me with two kids and said, how many pounds in a ton? And I said, well, let's look it up. And I was like, why didn't you guys think of that? Anyway, that was kind of interesting that adults don't always think of it.
Which
sometimes kids don't even.
And it speaks to how the learner is changing, actually.
Yeah, normally a librarian would have just gone to a book and looked it up, but now we don't do that anymore.
And children are also becoming more independent and taking care of their own learning in some ways,
And
guided.
I think part of it, too, is the fact that the answers are so quickly retrieved that they're asking the questions. In the past, they may not even ask the question because it was so hard to find the answer that they would just kind of blow it off. But now that they know, they can get the answer to anything. It's not always the right answer, but they can get the answer to anything pretty quickly.
We did have to look on three different sites because I didn't know there was a difference between a short ton and a long ton.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, ooh, let's look at another. So I showed them that. To verify it, I looked at three different places.
Yeah. Well, my classroom is a computer lab, so when I have my math classes and we're doing stuff, it's very often that we'll be doing some problem and it'll be in some context, and some kid will ask, well, you know, what, I don't remember one thing, if I remember a specific one, but one was, so one had something to do with the lifespan of chickens, and nobody knew, okay, well, approximately how long does a chicken live? Nobody knew. And so 30 seconds later, three or four kids had an answer, and that was convenient. So it really was just-in-time learning, because as the question came up, it got answered. So
one question leads to another, and community of learners, right?
We need for you to...
I can tell you at the elementary level, in my building, I think it's different in different buildings in this district. We couldn't speak for everyone. I just know that in my building, there's very little technology, except what's in the lab. The technology that I have in my room this year for the first time is with the new reading program that we're implementing. And I'm a pilot teacher with the Rigby piece, and there are two components. There's five components to reading. And two of those components have to do with phonics and fluency, or phonemic awareness. And so this program is designed, really, it says it's designed for the 21st century learner, and it's making steps toward that to use hypermedia. And so in my classroom, it took me about a good 5 months before I could get the hardware that I was able to confiscate in my building to access the software online. You have to have an online connection, so I had to make sure that I had permission to do this with these laptops. And finally, in January, I had a tech just tweak the server so that the data and my database and access to the online stuff works, and now I can set down students in my room whenever it comes, almost like a center, but they are able to do it alone, independently, which frees me up for the first time to be able to go on and do my other work. And these are kids who are struggling readers. They can sit and go through this phonic piece. I can later go back and assess it really quick. It's not a long, arduous thing. I don't have tons of paper everywhere. I just listen to them, you know, and I get their best work. The computer somehow, the software saves their best work. So I hear it, and then I can either move them forward to the next level or, you know, have them practice more. And the fluency piece, he reads 6 times to get his best reading. He gets immediate feedback on how his readings, each reading was. And so the computer saved the best one. When I go back to assess it and listen to it, I can hear each kid, you know, his best reading, and the same thing. I can move them up a level, and they can go back and practice more.
Do they seem excited by the program?
They are engaged. And I'm talking about my autistic kid, mm-hmm. who was a non-reader when fall started. He's now reading.
What grade?
Perfect for him.
He was a non-reader, so he was...
Maybe what grade of kid?
Third grade.
Oh, okay.
So he's a kid who was a non-reader in the fall, coming up K-1-2, coming into third now, not reading, and then by December, finally, January, picking up and able to read short passages at the kindergarten level. So he's going to be he's growing. He really is growing. I have the phonic piece that helps support him, but he gets his direct instruction from his resource teacher. So this way, I support that growth, and yet kind of how he feels included in the classroom. And then I have another little child who, and he's able, both of these boys are able to sit there, do this by himself, listen to the mic, and speak, and do the whole thing.
Good.
So it's so exciting because,
yes,
my gosh, now I can do some other things.
So you
makes my job
a lot of
it better.
The technology piece.
Yeah,
and
I
think everyone sees that with your ESL kids or your kids who, you know, I'm from a school where, you know, 8 years ago when I started there, maybe 20% of the kids had computers at home. That's it. Now it's probably 90. But the effective use and the smattering of training that they've had before they get to middle school it's really varied. And
so maybe
that
leads into question number 3. What support would be helpful to implement these ideas, and where might it come from? If the district is so, if the kids coming from a certain feeder school, as you watch their growth, if their technology is so.
Well, with the site-based management every school has, what I see is the elementary schools have a huge difference in what is offered to the kids.
Well, because my wife teaches second grade, and she's part of the same pilot at Sanborn, and she doesn't have what you just described.
Yes, she does, but Sean, all the teachers in the pilot group are hesitant to get into the pilot, into the technology piece.
Well, she doesn't use it, I should say.
Yes,
so if she does,
she would be so thrilled.
But you could help them.
It took me a long. I went through the whole.
Once
you
become an expert,
I'm so excited
for them. But everyone in the pilot group, when I brought up the technology, we were like, "Oh, we'll wait." I was saying, "Oh my gosh, it's so easy. It's really not that hard. The hardest part is getting the district to empower us to do that, to just access it." And I thought, because this is a pilot, you better try the whole piece.
So
we're buying this program, let's look at the whole piece.
We need support from the district.
Oh, and I think she will just appreciate it once she tries it.
When we had that extra session, we talked a little bit about technology plans in a district and how that's something that our district really needs to do is get that technology plan together. And then we talked about building technology plans. But I think we're building everything. You're talking about the site-based management, which is wonderful in concept, but sometimes there's a lot of pieces missing, and I think in technology that's where a lot of things are missing, because one school, if they have their act together with technology tools, people are sharing information, but it's not going district-wide. I mean, we all show up to this class, but there needs to be something that's more top-down that says, okay, these are the things that we want to do, and this is how we want to have it implemented within the schools, and have that key person in each of the schools so that if they're meeting, they're then disseminating that information to everybody inside that school. And I think that there'd be a lot higher comfort level in using the different tools out there if we were better trained. One of the sessions that I talked about in the forum, and I don't, it was changing our paradigm shift in technology. It dealt with this one high school district. They had a K-2 school, a 3-5 school, a middle school, and a high school in this district. And this city, that all these schools are in one city. These schools broke off from a bigger district. And in that little district there, they have a requirement that every teacher attend 3 half-day seminars on technology every year. And I don't know if it's part of, he didn't explain if it was like an in-service day or if it was you get subs for that day, but I kind of got the feeling that they're happening all the time throughout the year. So maybe subs for, you know, 10 teachers that day, and then the next time they have them, and so on. Then they also have an all-day technology in-service day that everybody attends, and there's a series of classes throughout the day, and you get to choose some, and some are assigned to you. All the teachers are assessed as to their computer and technology skills, and then their plan for what they need to learn is based on that assessment. Now, granted, we probably don't have the personnel to do that, but just that thought process, that training is so important that they're going to spend a lot of time doing that. And then they also said by having that training, they end up with less technology troubles. And so you're not dealing with the troubles as much through that department. They're dealing a lot more with training, and they're, you know, using a lot of neat tools. And in fact, they said that if you want computers, they don't just automatically fill a lab. They don't say, okay, your school gets a lab this year because you fall in the rotation. You have to ask for it, and you have to tell them why a new lab would benefit you, what you're going to do with it. And then at the end of the year, if you get it at the end of the year, you have to fill out some sort of paperwork saying how you used it and what the results were, or they might come in and take it away and say, there's somebody over here who wants it, and they'll use it.
And that's, in hearing from Bill Brayshaw, what he's talking about, I think that's the way our district wants to go. I think the shift has to come from the staff themselves. I mean, to realize, I mean, just because it's so ingrained that, well, I want some computers, so I have to ask for some computers, to make that shift to, I want to do this, so how do I do this? And that's what they want to do, and they want us to make individual tech plans at each school to do that. But so it just isn't getting done.
They want trainers in every school. I remember part of that big plan, too. But they want.
I think it's like Jim said, that some of that power, that empowerment to pursue technology like that, you have to have some top-down saying, okay, this is a priority for us. Let's maybe begin with the basic piece here. Start out with what is your action plan to implement technology. Unless you get someone at the top who supports that belief that you'd like, that action that you'd like to see happen, then teachers aren't going to take it serious. I think
it's true. To give
it's
them
the people in the ground grassroots level in schools who are making these small shifts, like our great librarians, and you know, who are taking the time to learn these tools and apply them. But for teachers, our day is really filled. But if And, you know, we need, like me, I finally, oh my gosh, this little piece of technology that I have in my room says, oh yes, this has made one giant step in me being more effective as a teacher, considering how little time I have. This little technology piece has added minutes to my time, my efficacy. But, you know, it's because I feel like, wham, somebody heard me and said, this will work, and this makes it happen. I think we need to hear from the top that technology is important, and these are some basic things that we need to see happening. You don't have to spend a ton of money, but these are some basic things. And I like the outline that you provided from the high school piece. I thought, yeah, we need to start really maybe thinking that way, hearing it.
If you take an analogy to the music industry, you look back 8-10 years, whenever the illegal Napster was going strong and people were sharing music files, and not that they don't still, but it was rampant and everybody thought it was okay, and that was going on. The music industry got a little kick in the butt saying, you know what, people don't necessarily want to buy full CDs on everything, and they want to have their music accessible in different ways. And if you look at all into how the music industry is acting now, they're really expanding the ways that they distribute music, whether it's, you know, song at a time type, like in Rhapsody or some of these other sites. Even Walmart has song at a time music that you can buy for 88 cents. You look at things like MySpace, where the music companies actually have artists out there and you can sample their music, because they know that the industry is changing. And in education, sometimes we need to see what that kick in the butt is to us and why we have to change, and then start these discussions that it's not an option. It's not, oh, this is a nice tool. It's, we've got to change, because the kids that are coming into us, that's how they learn. We can't teach them our way if they learn a different way.
Yeah. And a lot of these things, the infrastructure to use them, there's some cost to it, but a lot of it, there's no cost at all.
I know, that's changing so much. And just to piggyback off you guys, kids have been coming, and teachers have been coming to the library for years and saying, audio, audio, audio. Well, if you know, audio is expensive. Well, just today, and I'll just read this really quickly. It's a paragraph about publishers phase out piracy protection on audiobooks. So this ties into the music thing, too. Random House was the first to announce it was backing away from DRM, or digital rights management software, the protective wrapping placed around digital files to make them difficult to copy. In a letter sent to its industry partners last month, Random House, the world's largest publisher, announced it would offer all of its audiobooks as unprotected MP3 files beginning this month, unless retail partners or authors specified otherwise. And I'm like, whoa, you're kidding me.
That's huge. But it can't be true.
It's here.
Publishing it, I mean, the whole royalties thing and all that is all going to come into play.
And then Penguin says the second largest publisher now appears set to, I'll follow up on this. Just came to today in the New York Times. But I'm very excited. So the music industry and all the other industries, it should follow suit that, like you said, very little cost. Apparently we're going that way.
Yeah.
I'm not, but someone is.
But our job is to really help kids use what we have effectively. And if we as teachers don't know how to do that.
Well, or integrate what they're already doing socially or in other ways into how we're teaching them.
What I find really exciting about this class is that people like Julie and Silver Creek and Pat with her blog and getting library people involved, there are some exciting, Jim, your class and your student, there are some exciting things happening with just the little pieces that you guys are doing, which are awesome. And I think if those empowered at the top or whatever saw some of these examples, I think they're going to start changing their thinking and say, oh my gosh, there are teachers out here. We have teachers out here who are teaching our kids new ways of learning.
Well,
and
Sean,
we need to start thinking about this.
Sean, I didn't get to ask you, but Sean took Amari? Orozco?
I say his name wrong every time.
I know, me too.
Amari.
He was the Longmont High student who won first place at the tech fair. And so Sean took him for an interview with, because he needed a ride. And Sean was nice.
He was on Chalkboard Chats.
You were not.
No.
Where did you end up?
With Randy Zila and Sandy Searles. They did a little thing. Or they do it once a month. Is that how often they do it?
Once a month, yeah.
But he was on that with them. And they interviewed him about his project and everything.
And when I listened to him, I thought he was a very well-spoken.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it. What's it on? It's on the TV?
Well, it's on Channel 3.
Channel 3, okay. So
I haven't seen it yet either. But
yeah, but you watched it.
When they were doing it, yeah.
And how did he do?
He did great.
Yeah, he's a pretty smart kid.
I get excited when I see you guys with all this stuff. It's like, okay, what should I be doing at elementary level, just the basic little, well, before they go anywhere? I get excited when I see what you guys are doing. It's like, oh, yeah. Yes,
and
this
what
is
technology
great.
Can do with a kid like Amari is he's not a good student. He really isn't. But he found something that he's really good at, and he's able to integrate that into a lot of other things. So
I think this speaks to a change that may be coming, the way Governor Ritter is thinking about education in our state and how he wants to see things look different. I think he's experienced some of the same activities that are happening, same learning experiences that children are undergoing. We need to start changing. I think it's changing. It's a slow shift now. It's gradual. It costs money, but you don't have to expend all that money. Look at what you're doing with what you have.
Yeah.
There's
a lot more tools available
to.
Lately.
Yeah. And to revise a little bit what I said about Amari. So I say he wasn't a good student, but I think he's a great learner. So when it matters.
He doesn't get straight A's, is that what you mean?
No,
right.
Not at all.
That's a weak. I immediately interpreted that. He's not a straight A student. The report card isn't going to show up.
Right.
But I got what you meant. Okay. Yeah, he's a very well-spoken, very smart.
And I think that speaks to the power of what I've learned from this class, is that technology, besides just being a tool, they're opening the doors to other tools. And yes, it is a tool, and we use it as a tool, but look at the learning that can occur when children are empowered to, you know, become part of a bigger community of learners, even teachers, you know. We learn from each other and how we can grow in technology. I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Well, and I think some of the things that I've seen in this group, you know, 10 to 15 people, we've seen some of the pretty cool things other teachers are doing. But I don't know that a lot of other teachers are seeing that. So it almost needs a forum to showcase some of these things that some of these guys are doing, and that might inspire or give other teachers ideas of how they can apply some of the same ideas in their own way.
That's an age-old problem, too, though, when you think about it. I mean, you've always heard about good teachers in the district, and you've never seen their work. But this does give us more of a forum. I mean, if you think, you know, 20 years ago, a good teacher, there's no way for you to see what they were doing because you were in the classroom at the same time they were in the classroom. Here, at least you can see some of the stuff they're doing because it can be, you can go search it out on the web. But like we talked about with, what was her name, the one who did the little session today?
Pat.
With the thing that Pat's doing, you can get the RSS feed for that, and I can see every time she's posting something new. And so there is that ability now to at least peek a little bit into the classroom, or at least the mindset of what these other teachers are thinking, where in the past that really wasn't available.
I think that really makes this class, has made this classroom really exciting, thanks to Bud. We're creating such an awesome venue to bring a few people together, but you're creating a bigger community here. Little by little, word of mouth spreads quick. You know, and people go, hey, you got to look at this. Hear about so-and-so do this. Look at this. Watch this. You know, oh, I don't have time, but you have just a moment. Just hit it on your computer there.
Well, and I was in the same building with Bud the last several years, and we had some of those same discussions within the building, because I was interested in it, so I'd come, and Bud was sort of the expert in the building, and so I'd go, you know, ask questions, and we'd throw ideas off each other, and there were a few others around, and I think that's kind of where we're at right now, is throwing ideas around.
Well, I think at some point, you know, one of the roadblocks is, as a teacher librarian, I work a lot with the teachers, but so many times they're throwing at me, well, I have all this stuff I have to do, and I have these assessments, and we have power standards at our school. And our school is not the norm, but Coleridge was sort of a guinea pig, and we have had huge, huge hardware and network problems. I mean, huge. So much so that some people don't even want to go to a lab, because they'll go there, it'll take 15 minutes to log on. Well, that's a lot of time when your periods are 55 minutes. Get kids in, so they have ideas, or they just, you know, kind of stay stuck with what they always have done, or they're using technology strictly to word process, you know, just to type. And then we have the kids out there that do come to our school with no keyboarding training at all because of how they staff the elementaries. And that's where I do think that one place the district needs to support and maybe even demand is that there are these minimum things that must be done at this, you know, level, elementary level, and at maybe your middle school. You know, you guys are seeing a lot of different things because you have kids who are independent and are, they've had some training, but they have a lot of freedom in their lives. I still have the kids who, I mean, I do a lot of, the one thing I have done well is I have a good web page and I create tracks and I do a lot of structure things and I share that with teachers and I take their web addresses so that they're not handing the kid all these URLs and saying, here. I mean, because that's what they're still doing. And again, it's a training piece. And it's also possibly for some staff saying, you must do a technology type project each year and you'll be assessed on it. It's part of your evaluation. And that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing if it's done correctly. Otherwise, a lot of people will just not.
And so I think really it's essentially it comes down to what's really some basic pieces we could start out with. At my level, at the elementary level, I think it's equity in terms of instruction and expectations. Some basic keyboarding school skills. Part of it, our problem is that in terms of FTE, the principal, you know, is not going to allocate an FTE to support even a half-time instructor in there because he has other priorities. You know, if you're going to make technology part of something, you're going to start where you can. You know, maybe it means taking a librarian who's a part-time computer person or something to teach basic skills, but we don't have the equity of instruction or expectations of any of our programs, I think.
I don't know how much more time we're going to have, but kind of from what you both have been talking about, this ties in, although I think we can change this on the wiki, and you can change it as I say it right now. How do we decide which components of old school to keep and which components of Classroom 2.0 to implement? And to change that, and you guys are talking more about, we have teachers who are doing old school, basically, not only do they not have the training, but they don't even have kids with the skills, and they don't even have the basic technology, or they have trouble with technology, which is what you said.
But you see it the other direction too, where teachers have skills and so they just overuse them, and they think that technology can be applied to every single question.
Well, I don't see that in our building at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some things too that old school thing that they're doing. Maybe you could do the same thing, but just in a little bit more efficient way, in a more accessible way. So that all you're really doing is creating an efficiency in what you already do. So.
But you have seen examples of teachers using too much technology?
Yeah, just take handwriting, for example. Mm-hmm. How many, if you took a look at kids' handwriting, 15, and handwriting, I think, still matters. I think there's still times when you have to write a note. And there's some kids who cannot write. There's kids who cannot write in cursive whatsoever that are in high school. Not at all. So that's what I mean. Maybe there's a little bit of that old school where, you know what, guys? We're not going to type this paper. You're going to write it by hand.
Well, they need to write it by hand because CSAP requires them to write it by hand.
Well,
as we sat in CSAP today watching the writing portion,
did you read
they
that?
Did well.
There's research that Harvard has done that the kids who longhand write their research papers or have done quite a few of those are better writer than the one who's processing.
And
well,
I think the teachers are having them write more because they know that they have to prepare them for that test.
Well, and you look at the calculator warfare that goes on in math classes. You know,
it's the
same. And then a kid
it's the same idea.
The kid's there at the restaurant, and they need to leave a tip, and they have no idea how to figure out how to leave a tip.
But they got their cell phone. They can.
But that would be the only way that they'd do it.
And so, Jim, in terms of handwriting in the elementary school, and I can only speak from my building, I'm sure totally different in other buildings, but handwriting is last on the plate for first grade teachers who introduce handwriting, printing, and all of that, and second grade teachers, because we're doing all this other stuff. Our time is like maxed out.
Oh, I understand.
So after CSAP, you'll be doing cursive.
I hardly know a middle schooler that even turned to cursive. They are coming out with just the basic, you know, manuscript. They are not. My own children had, you know, training in second or third grade, and that was it. That was all that they were allowed, and that's 10 years ago.
Well, and how many of your middle school teachers tell their kids, I want every paper typed, because it's easier to read, for sure. And so they come in and everything gets typed, and then there is no handwriting. And that's just one.
That's not happening because of kids' access. I mean, it's not happening at my school.
They're not making them type them?
No, because they're typing with one finger because they never learned on a keyboard.
Well, my son's in a different district, but he's in sixth grade. And in the last 2 years, he has not handwritten one. I mean, he does their little essays sometimes, but when they get the papers, every single one is typed. Has to. I'm not saying that's bad or good. Right. That's the first time I had to do it was when I was in college. First time I had to have papers typed.
Yeah. It depends on the culture of your school, too. I mean, they could never require that at my school because of the situation the kids are in.
Oh.
They could never require that.
But I just think I think as we go through this, this is a question we have to, as important as the questions of how are we going to train all these teachers, we still have those questions. What pieces are necessary? What pieces do we really want to teach these kids in technology? And what parts of the old school do we say we still need that?
Yeah, we need to take a position. We need to make a commitment to a position and get behind.
Well, everyone's going to have a different opinion, but I agree with the handwriting.
I do too.
5 minutes. So is there a question that you want to touch on that we, just go right to number 7 with the 5 minutes left. What's next for you as a learner? Where do you go from here?
Well, I can hardly wait for the next online conference, but I'm going to pick up and watch some of the old videos the other videos from 2006, 2007 that I didn't get to because there were so many.
For me, it's a big, because all this is like a whole new language for me, and new vocabulary. So I do need to go back and revisit, and I'm kind of edging toward trying maybe a blog.
And then there's conferences that you can go to further your learning.
Yeah. So I guess start with me, because Sue said about being a participant. You have to know what you're doing before you can bring it to the classroom.
So you have to learn to narrow it down. That's my problem. I feel overwhelmed. Technology has never been easy for me, and I don't know why. I mean, even getting a blog going for most people is like
no brainer.
For me, it's hard. Yeah. And then because you have to be motivated to be just like Pat was saying, she just has so much fun with it, and da-da-da-da-da. I've started 2 blogs. They're just sitting there because I'm not motivated.
And I think you have to have, a purpose for it. I had a friend that they had, their daughter was having heart surgery, and they were going to California, and it was a really big deal. And there's a site called, what's it called, Caring Bridge. And basically, it's just a blog site, but it's a blog site that you can sign up and do a page for. They did one to update like the status of what was going on. So then, instead of, you know, calling them and talking to them and bothering them at a time where they probably didn't want to be bothered, they would just, you know, take 5-10 minutes here or there and update things there, and everybody that wanted to know would just go there and see how things were going and see how they were doing. So it pretty much was a blog, but it was, you know.
I had an eye injury a couple years ago, and I kept a blog on that for a variety of reasons, but that was the first time I blogged, and then I had several going, and that's really what got me doing it with my kids all the
have
time.
People corresponded with you and left comments.
There's
do you remember
few,
what Pat
yeah,
said?
Yeah, there's been a few
yeah.
that do that, but it was the same sort of reason. Getting back to what's next, if I'm going to Thai for the fourth time this summer, if any of you ever
are
gone
you presenting?
To Thai. I'm not this year, I did last year.
So did Jeremy or anybody send out a...
Not yet. That's still supposed to be coming. It's
okay,
technology and education.
I'm
going.
Phil is going.
Well,
I'm presenting.
I'm co-presenting with Phil, but I'm not getting the money. I'm not getting the in-kind compensation.
I think they will come up with some scholarships.
Yeah, they said
he wants my microphones.
They said there'd be about half as many. But that's a great conference. And
I've never been.
Oh, you should go.
Every time during the summer, I go and grade AP tests for computer science.
Funny.
And every year in the last 5 years, it's always been the exact same week. So I've never
went.
That's
too bad because it is a great conference.
Like
and what's one of the nice things about it, it's a lot of the same content that's on the K-12 one, but you're sitting in front of a computer a lot of the time, and so you're getting the practice. And you can ask questions of who's doing it where when it's an online conference, a little more difficult. So that's fun. Then you also have, 1,000 people or whatever, bouncing ideas off each other. And everybody's, for that week, is kind of engulfed in technology. And so that's what everybody's thinking about. So it's not like you have to go search somebody out to talk this over with. There's...
bunch of people.
When you turn around, you run into one.
Well, I think along the same lines of this online conference that we see, I think at a conference like TIE, a lot of those ideas would have been integrated with it so that some of the conferences would be webcast
yes.
or,
and
know,
I think they're starting. Yeah, I think they're starting to do more of that because there's a page, every presenter gets a page on the website, I can't remember if it's a wiki or what it is, but you get a page on there and then you can upload anything you want. So I did, mine was on how to incorporate video into a blog. I taught people how to first shoot the video, how to edit the video, and then how to put it onto a blog. And we put all our examples up there, all our instructions were put onto that. So if anybody went to that page, they could see all the examples we showed in class.
Was that last year?
Yeah.
I mean, you can still go to them usually. They usually leave them up for a couple of years.
I don't. I think so.
They usually do.
So, how do you want to wrap this up? The next minute.
How about with the song?
Oh, we're trying to wrap it up. Jim suggested we sing a song,
and I don't have
a singing voice, so.
Does that mean you guys feel wrapped?
You want to get us started?
I think so.
With a song?
Sure, in just a second. Great. Bye.
Bye.